This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Buddhism 101 with me, Brent Caldwell.
And me, Helen Ingrams. This podcast series is about sharing our experiences of Buddhism and being Buddhist in Aotearoa, Dunedin.
We're just a couple of lay people with an interest in sharing and talking about what we've learned, asking questions and clarifying our understandings. We are by no means experts, but we are willing to tell you what we've learned.
Or rather, what we've remembered, what ideas have stuck in our minds. There will be loads that we'll miss out or we even haven't heard of yet.
And today, Helen, we're going to sort of move away from the theory and delve more into everyday practice.
Yes, we are. We've actually spent 6 months now, can you believe it, in podcasts, going through the concepts and the ideas. And so we are moving much closer now to how do we put it in practice.
And I guess one of the reasons this podcast began in the very first place was because of questions I used to ask you about your practice.
Yeah.
And asking about things I would observe at the Dagi Buddha Centre.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been really looking forward to this because I think what we're going to find out is it's not one size fits all.
No, not at all. Very personal.
Okay, so let's crack into our first section.
So this is setting up a home meditation space. How do you do it? We're going to acknowledge right from the get-go that there is no right way to do this. It's so personal. And it can be like a whole room if you're lucky enough to have that much space.
Yeah.
You could have just a corner of a bedroom, which I have at the moment. Or it could just be a cushion that you bring out every morning and sit in a little space in the lounge where it's warm. It's just sort of entirely up to you what you do.
So can I ask you then,
yeah,
when you were setting your space up,
yeah,
where did your information come from?
Well, I think I had another path before I was into Buddhism. Mm. And there was always a little altar and a little something that symbolized your presence, mm, and a cushion that you sat in front of, and then you just meditated from right there. So I've always known it from when I was about 20.
Because I think I was saying to you last week, or just in conversations we've had, that when I was sort of beginning my initial scratchings and trying to find out what I was on this YouTube channel called The Enthusiastic Buddhist, this,
yes,
lovely girl in Western Australia,
yes,
who I keep mocking her accent, I can't help it. But she did one that talked about setting up an altar space in your house. And I know it sounds weird, but I had never even thought of doing it.
Wow.
Until,
yes,
she said, have you considered having a space? And I guess that's where my approach began.
Yes.
So let's maybe talk about all the different aspects of these,
yes,
things. But I guess to come back to this original point is,
yeah,
that there is no one way.
No, there is no right way. It's just what suits you, your context, your lifestyle, what you want to do, how long you've got to do
it. I love
it.
That because you can't get it wrong.
No, you can't get it wrong. No, this is tailor-made for us both, Brent.
Okay, so was there anything more you wanted to say about the space?
Well, maybe just a little thing that I tend to meditate all over the house, you know, just where I am, when I can get the time. But actually, all my teachers have always said, if you can sit in one place consistently, although you might think it's a bit woo-woo, what actually happens is that the energy does collect and it becomes easier to drop into that state of mindfulness if you're there at the same place every time you do it.
Yeah, and I can understand that because if you it's like karakia in Māori culture means to etch out a space. So when you do karakia, what you're doing is you're basically setting out a place and saying, in this place, this is what we're doing here.
Right.
And I guess what I'm hearing you say is that you could go into, and your altar's in your bedroom, didn't you?
Yes.
So you go in there, and the minute you're in there, Yeah. You do a wee code switch because you know this is your safe.
That's a really good way of putting it, code switch.
Yeah.
It's like the intention, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do.
It's like you can sort of think about going to the gym or you can go to the gym.
Yeah.
And once you're at the gym, you know why you're there.
Yes.
So with your space, you go in there and you suddenly feel like you're locking into your practice.
Yes. Definitely, okay. Yes.
What about if you're in a shared home, you know, like if you're in a flat situation?
Well, that can work. You know, it can be just on a little piece of material you've got on your sideboard with a candle, and that's your little place. You know, if you're a flatmate, it would be your bedroom.
Mm.
If you've got kids around, you probably want to make somewhere quieter. You know, it just sort of depends what you're... Yeah, it's always doable. That's the thing.
And something I would find challenging is that cleanliness and simplicity is a bit of a key.
Yeah, well, I used to find that too. Dusting is not my forte. And I often find on my...
I've read about dusting.
Yeah. So it often turns up in my practice that, you know, I have to dust the altar once a week before I actually can sit down.
Mm.
And it's considered like a mark of respect to the teachers and to the practice. Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, so we've got ourselves a space. It's different sizes, and it could be in a home, and it's a clean and simplistic place. What's next?
Well, it's sort of... It's good to have an external focus, like something that you can concentrate on to get you into meditation, or a symbolic representation of your commitment or your belief. So for Tibetan Buddhists, it's often a statue of the Buddha, which is the most elevated symbolic way that... You know, it's something that the highest to aspire to, really, when you do meditate. And it could be a painting or a painted scroll.
Oh, okay,
scroll.
So it doesn't have to be a statue.
In fact, it could be none of that at all. It might just be a candle.
I remember when I was watching The Enthusiastic Buddha, and they were saying something around you should always have a full statue of the Buddha, not a head.
Yes, I've heard that.
Because you see those garden centres and places where it's just a head or a hand.
Yes.
But I remember her sort of talking quite distinctly that because it's an altar, it needs to show the full body image.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
And I guess...
And also there are lots of different Buddhas. Like I thought I was getting a Shakyamuni Buddha when I bought one.
There's one of those words you've used again.
Yeah.
What's a Shakyamuni Buddha?
Well, Shakyamuni is the name for Gautama Buddha, the Buddha that came 2,500 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. But actually I got another Buddha.
Ah.
By mistake. But... You
wasn't
know.
The wee round bald fat guy with
no,
the big
no,
tummy?
No, it wasn't. No, they are that's the Chinese representation.
He's laughing and carrying on.
I know, and he's great.
He's out at the Sinclair Esplanade in front of the Spirit House.
Yeah, he is. He is, and
looking
he's
all very jolly.
Yeah. But I got a medicine Buddha instead, and it's to do with a lot of the hand gestures that the statues have, and if they're carrying a flower or a book, or
if they're touching the ground.
Yeah,
and that's always my favourite because I remember seeing those when I was in Thailand, and when I went to India, you know, those are the ones that really resonated with me because it was a thing about being earthed and touching the ground. And you know, the kaupapa of Aotearoa is, you know, a lot of it is based on the whenua.
Yes.
So I thought, I like that.
Yeah. Cool. Yes. So simple candle, a light, incense, a flower.
Yeah.
It could be anything or nothing at all. You know,
could you have a mixture?
You could have a mixture or all of them, you know. My altar's got quite busy at the moment because I've got pictures and a Buddha and a flower every day. It's getting a bit, now we're into winter, there's not so many flowers in the garden. Mm. Incense, and sometimes water bowls, but... Yeah, we'll go into that later.
I kept telling my wife, you know, I was getting really twitchy. People would leave keys on because I've got mine.
Yeah.
And in our house, we have this kind of like central area,
yeah.
which is one of the things I really love about it. And so you always walk through it to go to another part of the house.
Ah.
And so I've placed my Buddha on a statue on a wee plinth in there, and yes. it sits on a scarf, and it yeah. sits on one of the prayer scarves that I got before I went to do that Buddhism training. Remember?
Oh, yes, at the refuge.
Yeah, Rinpoche gave me a prayer scarf, and
yes.
so I've got that on that because it's special to me.
Yeah.
And most recently, I've just added a couple of photographs of two members of my family, my extended
right.
family, who are really unwell.
Yes.
So
that's a good
every
thing
time
to
I walk
do.
Past them in the house,
yes.
and I look at them, I think of them.
Yeah.
And I think of that as a meditation.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've also got other wee statues in other parts of the house because I'm a bit like you. You know, wherever you go, there you are. And if I sit in my bedroom,
yes.
there's a wee one in there.
Yes.
We've got one in our office.
Yes.
Because it just reminds you that
it does.
It's everywhere. It doesn't actually have to be in one place.
No, absolutely. And I've got a picture of the Dalai Lama in the car, which sort of keeps
okay.
me within the speeding limit.
Okay. Let's maybe now talk about supports you might have for your body.
Yeah. So here we're talking about how you can comfortably sit without going numb or without getting aches and pains, because they it happens.
I'm laughing because at school,
yeah.
if you ever say to kids about meditating,
yeah.
they instantly sit in lotus position. They
Do
put
they?
Their hands on their knees and they go, oh, you know, it's like it's such a thing. People
yeah.
think that's it.
Yeah, they
but
do.
It's not, is it really?
No. So just sitting comfortably, I think the main thing is to have a straight back or as, you know, comfortably, relaxedly straight as you can make it. So if you're sitting on the floor or near the floor, cushions. I've got actually a little bean bag that I use.
Okay.
And it can mold to my position, and I find it quite supportive.
I have an attachment cushion.
What's an attachment cushion?
I went to a 10-day Buddhism retreat, meditation retreat up at Staveley
yeah.
some years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting on the cushions that they provided, and you know.
You got attached to it.
I'm this, you know. I'm a Catholic, so yeah. we're sitters and kneelers and standers.
Yeah.
We are not sitters in the legs crossed department.
Yes.
And I looked across one day and my legs were aching, and I looked across and here's this guy, and he was sitting on this lovely kind of puff-sized cushion
oh.
full of kapok. It was really firm.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I reckon I could actually handle that.
Yeah.
So when I left, I went and ordered it online.
Yes.
And that's become my meditation cushion.
What a great idea. And you call it an attachment cushion.
Well, because I looked at it and I got attached to it. It's probably a lesson of, oh, no, I don't get attached to things. Actually, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a cushion that I use. And when I sit on that, and it's like you walking into your room.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as I'm on that cushion,
yeah.
I know why I'm there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's so important.
Sitting in a chair is okay, isn't it?
That's great. And for a lot of Westerners, especially older Westerners, that's the only way we can meditate.
But the thing again is the back upright. So
it
if you
is.
Are sitting in a chair with the back, this isn't yes. about leaning back and sort of slouching in the chair, is it?
No, because it can make you a bit sleepy if you're there for half an hour or so. So just sitting a little bit forward from the back of the chair.
So you're finely balanced. So
yeah.
it's almost like the piano player's stance or like someone working in an office. You want
yeah.
to keep your back straight.
Yes.
So
yes.
you don't get drowsy.
Yes.
And
yeah, and this allows the energy, like the, you know, it does allow the energy from your sit bones just to sort of, it just keeps your back alive and your neck sort of nice and
so we're not tense.
Well.
We're
not tense.
So it's
no.
almost like we're,
no.
you know when you balance a broom handle on your hand?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what we're talking about, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you are.
You're sitting straight, up straight.
Yeah.
You're neither forward nor back nor
no.
side to side. You're
no.
just poised.
Or, yeah, or think of yourself as a puppet with a string coming out of your head
okay.
and going straight down your body.
And the reason for this is for energy to flow.
Yes,
okay.
yeah, and it does flow.
And it becomes yeah. an addictive position, doesn't it?
Yes.
Do you find that?
I do, because if you sort of slouch out of it or you get a bit drowsy and you know you're over to one side, it feels off.
And when you come back into position, it feels really good.
It does. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and just to sort of finish off this segment, you can have yoga mats, folded blankets, if you're extremely flexible and just sit plonk on the floor and you're there. Meditation stools, kneeling stools, I think they're called.
Yeah.
For those of us with gammy knees, they're pretty good too.
Okay. And I guess seeing the blanket thing, you know how I have an attachment cushion?
Yeah, you've got an attachment blanket.
I do, which I went to a meditation retreat in Staveley. And nearby the camp, everyone would meet after we came out of silence.
Yes.
And everyone was about to go home after 10 days.
Yeah.
And we'd have a cup of coffee at this place.
Yeah.
And it's the, what's the name of the hill that it's near? Oh, Mount Summers, Summers Station woolen sheep blanket.
Oh, right.
So again, when I put that blanket and wrap it around me, I think, this is my safe place.
Yeah. Well, actually, yes, I should put that in here too, because I've got a couple of shawls. In winter, I've got one for my knees because my bedroom gets really cold.
Yeah.
And one around my shoulders.
Because you can buy shawls and yak wool shawls at the Dagi Buddha Centre.
Yes, you can. They're so warm.
And I always grab those ones in the corner of the Gompa when I come in. I'm the only one. I feel like I'm a bit of a blouse.
No.
Down on the floor there in front of the heat pump.
I know.
Okay. So we've talked about our space. We've talked about supporting our body.
Yeah.
Maybe let's have a chat about ritual and prayer supports.
Yes. So the things that we're going to talk about here are what actively we do to support the meditation. So lighting incense is a really good thing to include. And this is a way of symbolizing that you're purifying the atmosphere. It gives a lovely fragrance. It just sort of settles your mind and it helps you drop into a nice, relaxed state.
So again, it's a sensorial reminder of what you're going to do.
Yeah.
So if you've cooked fish for tea and there's a bit of a pong of fish in the house or the kitchen's nearby or something, some incense can overpower that.
It can.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I get
and it's
that.
So pleasant to breathe in. Bells or singing bowls. A lot of people have a bell on their meditation altar.
Do you?
No, I don't. But I know a lot of people who do. And it's, or singing. Have you seen the singing bowls? They're like these metal brass circular bowls.
Let me tell you about my bowl. Here it comes.
That's it.
That's my bowl, yeah. Because I bought it in Bodh Gaya.
Did you?
Yeah, it's very special to me.
Yeah.
And that's why I was so thrilled when we could use it for that interval music. Yeah. And you can make the ringing sound.
You can.
So incense purifies the air.
Yes.
The bell.
Yes. Well,
can.
Well, that sort of drops you into it's a sound thing as well that just sort of drops you into that space. So offerings. Now,
yeah, because.
Yeah.
When you see a Buddhist altar, you know, if you Google Buddhist altars, you'd be sort of looking at them and they always seem to have some similar bits.
They do.
And the bowls have always been something I've wondered about.
Yes. So we have water bowls, 7 of them. This is something that the Tibetans copied from India.
Right.
And it's a very old, like we're going back maybe a couple of thousand years here. Mm-hmm. There's 7 water bowls. They're all the same and they're put in a straight line and they symbolize that when you, it's sort of inviting your teacher or the person that you look up to in your meditation tradition, you're inviting them in mind to be with you when you meditate.
Now, when you mentioned about the bowls, I said, oh, okay, yeah, what are they for? So I did a quick Google.
Yes.
Because I put you on the spot and said, can you name all 7?
Yeah, and I couldn't. I got 5 out of 7.
Well, I think the reason you might have tripped up is because some of them appear twice.
Ah, okay.
So there is drinking water.
Yes.
There is water for washing feet.
Yes.
There are flowers, which accent sight and beauty. And there's incense for scent. There's light.
Yes.
Then there's perfumed or scented water.
Yes.
And then there's food for taste.
Right.
Now, the reason I'm saying this is because I go and look at some of those and they're always filled just with water.
Yes.
Why is that?
I think that's just the symbolic way that they do it. But I know when I've been to other meditation centres, they do float flowers in the water for the flower bit.
Mm-hmm.
And behind the row of bowls with water, they often have another row of bowls, and they might be filled with rice for the food, or rice with an incense stick for the incense. They can get quite elaborate.
So actually, if I wanted to put, say, like a small set of seven bowls on my altar,
yes,
how do I arrange them? Do they have to be circular? Do they have to be stacked? Or
well, they as long as they're uniform, I think that's the main thing.
Okay,
and you sort of pour water. You the first one you fill with water to the top, and then you very delicately pour a little bit of that water into each of the six bowls remaining.
Okay,
because there's a thing in Tibetan Buddhism that you never have an upturned bowl with that's empty. It either has to be face down on the table or have something in it, and then you fill them all up with water.
Because for some people there's a daily ritual where they're cleaning bowls and they're filling them with the water, and then at the end of the day the water is kind of very respectfully poured out and wiped out.
Yes.
Is that what happens at the Dagi Buddha Center?
Yes, it is. Yes, I think the monks, they refresh the water every morning quite early, and I think it's about 2 PM, or it's refreshed again, or at the end of the day.
There is a lot of bowls in that gompa.
There's a lot of bowls.
Okay. So we've got those offerings. We've got the water bowls.
Yeah.
What else might we find there?
Well, you can offer a candle. That's the incense again. A little bit of food. Some people offer whatever the main meal is of the day. They just put a little bit on the altar for just to sort of bless it, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so these are things that can assist us with the practice itself.
Yes, yes.
So we've got offerings. What about beads? Because I've seen long strings of beads.
Yes.
In fact, I think you've got some mala beads around your neck.
I have. So they're called malas. They're exactly the same as rosaries in Catholic tradition. So there's 108 beads, and every time you recite a mantra or a prayer, you can just flick a bead. And it, for some reason, holding something tangible really makes you concentrate. It really helps.
And prayer beads are a big thing in the Muslim tradition as well.
Yes, they are.
Ram Dasot used to talk about in his tradition, you know, that, you know, he'd just be fingering those beads going Ram, 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 you know, millions and millions of times.
Yes, and it just makes your mind extremely quiet.
So it's a kinesthetic displacement activity.
Yes.
So instead of fidgeting,
yes,
you know,
you've got something to do with your hands,
but it grounds you in the practice that you're doing.
Yes, it does.
Nice.
It does. Yeah, it's
nice.
Great. Yeah. And then a text or an image of your teacher can help if you're the text for me, because some of those prayers are really quite long. If you want to do a prayer before you begin meditating.
Something that just occurred to me is, coming from the Catholic traditions, you know, it has a quite a seasonal calendar. You know, like if you think about the Advent calendar, Christmas, and then there's the, you know, Palm Sunday and stuff like that.
Yes.
On your Buddhist altar, is it the same all the time?
It is actually. Yeah. Are you talking about different traditions?
Because for every Buddhist tradition, there must be little tweaks in how those things are done.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, if you look at the Zen tradition, that's very, very simple, very minimalist, and it's the space between the objects that is as essential as the objects themselves.
Mm.
And, I mean, there's a huge learning in that.
And at the other end of the continuum, because if I think about a Tibetan alter, you know, it's such a riot of colour.
It is. It is. There's so much going on. Yes. And I've asked people about that and they say, well, it might actually be because in Tibet, it's such an arid environment being so high that they put so much colour into their clothes and their everything else that they live with. Yeah. So as a closing thought, this can be extremely personal. Your space can evolve. And many practitioners develop, they have a totally different altar and meditation space at the end of their meditation time than they do years earlier. So the space becomes a kind of autobiography of your practice.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, the gathering of sort of small things throughout your life.
Yes.
You know, you can walk through your house and say, oh, I remember I bought that, and I got this to remind me of that.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It can be like that. Yeah.
So we've made us a step away today from theory and we've talked about practice.
Yes.
So I guess the next thing for us to talk about maybe next week or in the weeks to come is, you know, putting that practice into practice, if you like.
Yes.
You know, maybe going back and doing a small meditation.
Yes.
Often tricky in a podcast because dead silences. Air is not something that's favoured in the podcasting world. But I'm sure we could take people through that.
Yeah, I think we can. And there'll be lots of ways that we can, you know, take the practice into everyday situations. It'll be fun. There'll be a lot to talk about.
So if you're interested in finding out a wee bit more, feel free to email us, buddhism101podcast@gmail.com.
And please come along to the teaching at the Dargi Buddhist Centre at 10:30 on a Sunday.
At 22 Royal Terrace here in Aotearoa, Dunedin.
Yes, yes.
Well, look, Helen, thanks so much for taking me through that, because I know I've been pestering you to talk a wee bit about that.
It was a delight, really. It's been great.
We've probably just got time for a wee anecdote. And I remember you invited the monks to your house.
Yes.
And they saw your Buddha statue.
Yes.
And what happened?
Well, I had two statues, one that I had stopped using, and I was at a loss as to what you do with a Buddha statue when you've finished with it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't throw it away. You can't burn it.
Mm.
And so the monks were very, very insistent that they take them away, that they could paint them, beautify them, and they carved out the middle of the statues and they filled them with rolled up mantras and dried flowers.
Wow.
And then sealed it. So
how special is that?
So they're blessed. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So now every time you look at it, that's what you think of.
Yeah, that's right. And I think actually they will do it for any serious person who wants that for their altar as well.
Amazing. Well, this has been really, really educational. You're a mine of information. So to anyone listening, we just want to say,
may you be well.
May you be happy.
And may you live with ease.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.